Okay, so we are on the record. My name is Adelia Huang. I'm a hearings officer. This is case number 3180005 regarding an appeal of a Bureau of Transportation decision. And the appellant is Kevin Lane. Is that you, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. The time right now is about 1:30 in the afternoon. It is February 15, 2018, the time and date scheduled for this proceeding. I also notice that there is a representative here on behalf of the city. Could you please identify yourself?
My name is Ted Naimura, last name spelled N-A-E-M-U-R-A, and I'm a transportation officer of the City of Portland.
Thank you very much. So, I just have a couple of opening remarks to let you know what we're going to be doing today and how we're going to be doing it. And one thing that I want to check in actually before we get to a little bit more detail as to what my role is, I want to confirm, it looks like the city had submitted some documents into our file for this case. I want to confirm with you, Mr. Lane, did you receive those documents?
I'm not sure.
And they would be described on the sheet that should have been present before you came in, this exhibit list. And everything that indicates, let's see here, 11 through 19 would be those exhibits. Unfortunately, the copies you received would not have those exhibit numbers on them, but the title of this description of the document may be something you want to look at in order to determine if you received those documents.
I did receive the certified mail receipt and the tracking.
Okay, 17 and 18.
Yeah.
Oh, there should be two certified mail receipts, it looks like.
See if they're on different dates. Yes, there's two different ones. So I have both of those.
Okay. So let's see, we have 16, 17, 18 covered. Then there's also a PBOT warning.
Oh, the suspension letter. Yes, I believe I have that as well. Right here. Yes, ma'am. I have 19 as well.
Okay. How about 15, which is described as a January 31st, 18 document?
That I'm not sure of.
It's actually a copy of a letter with a PBOT letterhead, and it says, Dear Hearings Officer, Mr. Lane, in addition to the exhibits submitted earlier, the Bureau of Transportation submits the enclosed exhibits for consideration. So it looks like this letter came with the receipts, the
yes,
certified mail receipts.
Yes, I have that one as well, right
okay.
here.
Then there's also the screenshot, which has been marked Exhibit 14. It looks like an Excel spreadsheet.
I did not receive that one.
Okay.
I know that one for sure.
What about these printouts here that look like they have a old-fashioned courier font and looks like a DMV printout or some sort of licensure document?
I believe so. Are they dated on the top left January 16th at 11:18 a.m.?
No. At the bottom of these documents, it's on the bottom left, December 27th. Mr. Namoro, is it possible for you to show him a copy of exhibit, the printout for, let's see, license, DMV printouts?
Yes. Actually, three-page has some print. It looks like a driving record because it is, and then it might be on the back of some of those documents that you're looking at there. Or within those somewhere.
See, the only thing that I believe that I have is one that I printed out. And then I think, I'm not sure if I received one or not.
Okay, no worries. We can make you a copy.
Okay.
And you said you received a copy of the PBOT warning. Is that right? It looks like this, like a
no.
ticket? Okay. So I'm going to have these documents copied and then give you a few minutes to look at them, about 5 minutes. If you need more time, you can let me know, but I want to make sure you review them before we go on.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, pause the record, please. On the record? Okay, we're back on the record. I wanted to give Mr. Lane an opportunity to review some documents it looks like he had not yet received. And so, Mr. Lane, I think it looks like you should have all copies of the documents that Mr. Namer sent?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Great. Have you had enough time to look at everything that was sent?
Yes.
Okay. So, one thing that my office should have mailed to you is a notice of today's hearing. And with that, there should have been a document entitled Appeal Hearing Statement of Rights. It may be on the flip side of the notice of today's hearing. And it would have the hearings office letterhead on it, not Peabody's letterhead.
Okay. Okay, this one right here, I'm assuming.
That looks like it from what I can tell.
Okay.
So you're looking for, I'd like you to look for a statement of rights and procedures, which should have been included.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you have time to read that?
I did not have time to read all of it, no.
Okay, so we'll pause the record, take a few minutes to look it over, let me know when you're done.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Lane, now that you've indicated that you've read that statement of rights and procedures, do you have any questions about anything that that document stated?
No, ma'am.
Okay. One thing I want to mention is that this hearing is being audio recorded, and what my office will do with the audio recording, unless you tell us otherwise, is we will put a copy of the recording online on our website, so that if you need to access the recording for whatever reason, you can just download it without having to request that it be burned onto a CD.
Okay.
Occasionally there are folks who tell me that they'd rather not have the recording be made available online for any reason at all, and we will honor that request if that's what you would like to do, but unless you tell me today that you'd like to opt out, we will put the hearing recording online.
Okay.
Okay, so it's fine to do that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So another thing to keep in mind is that the location of that microphone is going to be very important for making sure that we pick up everything that you say loud and clear. So I think for how I'm hearing you, it would be better if we could move that, if you could move the microphone a little bit closer to you. And you can adjust it however you'd like. I'm just concerned that it might be a little soft based upon the distance away that the microphone is. So let me go, can you go ahead and say something?
Yeah, or yes, ma'am.
Okay. If you need to move it closer or adjust it, please do so. So, as a hearings officer, I do not work for the Bureau of Transportation. I am a hearings officer for the city, and I make determinations on whether or not city bureaus have correctly issued decisions. And so I'm going to be looking at what are the facts of the case and were the laws and rules correctly applied. The focus of today's hearing is going to be on the validity of a determination that was sent out, and I'm going to pull it up here. It looks like it's a notice of proposed suspension, and it was mailed to you, Mr. Lane, it looks like on January 4th, 2018. I have it marked as Exhibit 6. So my focus is on whether or not this decision that it looks like Mr. Namer issued, whether or not it is factually and legally correct. So when I make the decision, I'm going to be looking at all the evidence in the record. And the evidence in the record includes your oral testimony and any documents that have been admitted into the record. Now, any relevant documents can be admitted into the evidentiary record. So I'm inclined to find that after a review of the documents that I have that are all listed on that exhibit sheet, they all look relevant to me, but I want to ask, did either party notice any irrelevant documents that I should throw out or exclude because they have nothing to do with today's hearing?
No, ma'am.
Mr. Namura?
We have no objections.
Okay, so I am going to go ahead and admit exhibits 1 through and including 19. It doesn't mean I agree with those documents or exhibits, it just means that I can consider them when I make a decision. So one thing that I can't do today is I can't decide whether or not the city's determination is fair. Unfortunately, all the parameters that I have to do with whether or not their determination followed the city's laws and rules. So the determination of whether something is fair would have been made by the city council at the time they passed the law or whenever they authorized the Bureau of Transportation to do something. So that's just something that I can't consider the fairness of the situation when I make a decision. At the end, I may decide, make a decision here for you today, and I'm going to be deciding whether or not to sustain, keep the penalty notice as it is, modify, maybe some parts are need modification, some parts are correct. I could modify it based upon what evidence I have, or I can reverse the decision. There is another option where I can remand the decision or order that the decision be returned to the Bureau of Transportation for specific reconsideration, and that would be something that I would specify. After today's hearing, I will be mailing out a copy of my decision, and it will be the official copy of my order that you will have. Either party is allowed to appeal my decision by filing a writ of review under certain Oregon statutes, and I will certainly specify which of those statutes that is in my order so that you can have that information. So, how we are going to proceed today is, Mr. Lane, I'll give you the choice. As the appellant, you've brought the case to my office because you want to tell me why you disagree with the decision. I can let you start first with your presentation of your case, or you could tell me that you'd prefer to have the city go first in the presentation of their case. Regardless, each side will have the chance to tell me what they want to say, as well as provide any witness testimony, if either of you have any witnesses, and cross-examine any witnesses that testify. So there will be a back-and-forth exchange of information. Mr. Lane, would you like to start?
Sure.
Okay. One other option that I can give to you is that either of you have the option to give a brief opening statement. In cases like this, I often find that the opening statements are not really necessary, but you can tell me what you expect to show and demonstrate today. It's just a brief, like, Reader's Digest version of what you're going to prove. Would you like to do the opening statement, or would you like to waive that?
I'll waive that.
Okay, Mr. Namura?
The city believes that the issue for review will be chiefly, you'll hear testimony that Mr. Lane has been certified to drive passengers for hire by Uber and by the city of Portland. The city has intended to suspend the certification to drive, and the question will be, is the suspension lawfully issued? The cities would expect to bring you five areas of information. In addition to the issue which I just mentioned, we would describe the authorities that the city had to act. We would discuss the applicable code sections and provide some interpretations, present some significant facts, and then discuss some analysis and some conclusions with some additional interpretations, which just thinking about the code I think will be easier to understand in the context of the facts.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Lane, go ahead. And I am presuming you're going to be providing testimony, so please raise your right hand and I will swear you in. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I don't have too much to say. So basically, I got this in the mail saying that my private for hire license was up for suspension, and it gave me the three reasons why. And one of the reasons that it says on here is I was convicted of driving while suspended or revoked on September 27th of 2016. Well, I was, what would be the word? I was found innocent of that. So for it to be on here was kind of, I was unsure why it was on here. And I actually went down to the Municipal Court of Troutdale and actually found out that it was a clerical error, that shouldn't have been on my record.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have too much.
No problem. I see there's another gentleman here. Is he going to be a witness for either party?
No.
Okay.
No.
Is that all you'd like to present at this time?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Mr. Nymer, here's your opportunity to cross-examine Mr. Lane.
When you received the notice of suspension letter, you read it, and obviously you saw the parts of it that jumped out at you.
Yes.
Do you remember taking the ride that was discussed in the letter?
Yes.
And that was in the, I think that was in basically in southeast, northeast and southeast Portland areas. Is that about
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And when you went to the city of Troutdale, you mentioned they provided a letter, and that's the letter that we have. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
When...
Mr. Namer, maybe if you could direct your attention to me, since
sure.
I'm going to be making the decision.
I'm curious to ask if the... just to learn the sequence of events leading up to going to the city of Troutdale, it sounds like from your testimony you received the city of Portland suspension letter. Some of the information jumped out at you, and you went down to the municipal court in Troutdale to check that out.
Yes, I knew that what was on the Portland Bureau of Transportation that I got, one of them was incorrect.
Okay.
So I needed to go down to the city of Troutdale to basically get copies of the information I needed to show that that information was incorrect.
Nothing further.
Okay. And Mr. Lane, here's your opportunity to just clarify anything you think you need to clarify about what you just testified to. You don't need to clarify. That's generally just a formality.
Okay, then I'm fine.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Namer, please raise your hand and I'll swear you in. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Go ahead.
In my opening statement, I discussed what I believe the issue presented will be, so I'd like to turn to discuss a little bit about the city's authority to act in the situation of a proposed permit suspension. The city has a comprehensive ordinance that regulates the for-hire transportation industry. The number is 188483. As I mentioned when I identified myself, I'm a transportation officer of the city of Portland. I have enforcement authority under Chapter 16.10 of the Portland City Code, and I'm assigned to the private for-hire transportation unit. So the ride that Mr. Lane and I discussed in examination was a for-hire ride. The city paid for it by way of a city-issued credit card. The for-hire ordinances are within my transportation officer authority. The suspension, if upheld, will reach all aspects of Mr. Lane's ability to provide for-hire transportation services. And just sort of to clarify, as I will discuss in my factual section, Mr. Lane at the time, and I believe to date, still drives for the Uber company. It's a transportation network company, an app-based ride-hailing service. But the suspension would apply to any transportation company. Another one in town that does that similar service, Lyft, the suspension would apply there. It would apply to any other transportation network company and would probably impede Mr. Lane from getting a permit to drive in another industry. So it's an industry-wide prohibition, if you will, temporary in nature. The applicable code sections and some interpretations are in the determination letter. So on page 2, I'd like to start with what the suspension code language is. In essence, the director of the Transportation Bureau can suspend a for-hire driver certification or permit if he or she has reasonable grounds to believe that at any time the permittee fails or no longer complies with any section. And we might ask, well, what are the sections that one would have to comply with as a driver? And going through the letter backwards, the driver certification sections are listed in the decision, and again on page 2. And in particular, subparagraph 6 from the letter, an individual can't be certified to drive if their driver license has been suspended by a governing jurisdiction as a result of a driving-related incident. So maybe three prongs to that section to take a look at. The letter also recites subsection 7, and the gist of that section is a driver can lose their privilege, again, on an ongoing basis as needed, because you have to constantly maintain compliance. The driver can lose that permit if you get basically more than one traffic ticket in a 12-month period. And when the city issued its determination letter, we didn't know the information from the Troutdale Municipal Court. And I will go into a little bit more detail that the city does find the municipal court's information credible. So the city will be relying on subsection 6 throughout this case.
Can I just clarify, would you like to strike the reference to subsection E7 in that part then? On page 2 of the determination?
The city's, that's a great question. The city's request is that the hearings office devote no analytic or legal effect to it. The city would like to leave it in the determination letter because we are interested in contacting Uber with respect to this problem with one of its drivers. And my concern is that if we strike the provision, I will have to rewrite and reissue the letter for purpose of sending Uber a copy. So for administrative purposes, the city's request would be if the hearings officer can give subsection 7 no further consideration.
Okay, I will do that. I will take no action on whether or not there's been a violation of City Code 1640-270, subsection E7.
We withdraw that.
Okay.
Yes. So for facts, this case being a suspension, it arose, the facts emerged after the ride audit that I conducted with Mr. Lane. And just to clarify an important issue, all of the activity, factual and otherwise, that I conducted in this case and the observations of Mr. Lane and our interactions that I made occurred within the geographical boundaries of the city of Portland, Multnomah County, state of Oregon. So my ride audit with Mr. Lane was on October 21st, and that I believe was a Saturday. My ride started on Gleason Street in Northeast Portland and proceeded to Southeast Foster Road, kind of a crosstown route, if you will. At the end of the ride, I introduced myself to Mr. Lane. I showed him my city identification, and I recognized Mr. Lane as the individual seated here together with me at the table. I documented some of my findings on a warning slip, which I issued to Mr. Lane, pointing out what were code deficiencies, and I believe the way I discussed them with him was these were code violations, but I was at the time proceeding with a warning in the sense of I wasn't going to issue a ticket then or there, but I would have to reserve, and the warning slip says as much, reserve the city's prerogative to take further actions if more information is learned after the ride audit, which this is one of those cases where more information did emerge after the ride ended. My discussions with Mr. Lane were friendly, very much like we're having here between all of us individuals. I seem to recall my focus was on trying to explain the requirements at hand that we were going over on that warning slip. I did, after receiving my copy of the hearings office's appeal packet, notice in Mr. Lane's letter that he asked for a phone call to talk about the matter, and I did call him after receiving your office's letter as a courtesy to talk about the Troutdale paperwork, which I did read, and we didn't talk too long. I think it would be about a 10-minute call, which I mentioned just in the sense because it did ask for the letter did ask for a follow-up, and I didn't want to leave him hanging, so I did call him and talk briefly about the letter and the matter, and my sense that the letter was believable from the municipal court, but that it didn't satisfy all of the problems I was noticing with respect to his certification. And I could tell just on the phone he was disappointed with, and understandably, with the way that discussion went. But we did have that phone call. I would just like to get on the record that we talked about the case. So those are some of the facts of my personal interactions. I would like to now turn to what I would characterize as the onboarding facts of Mr. Lane. As I mentioned earlier, he was certified to drive by the Uber company, and hearings officer exhibit number 14 is a partial printout of Excel spreadsheet that the Uber company sends to the city. A version of it they send every day. And what is contained in that, the contents of that particular spreadsheet are a list of all the drivers that Uber has certified on that day. And the code requires Uber to send that statement of all that driver list to the city. So I'd like to just identify some of the main information in there. Columns A and B are Mr. Lane's name. Columns C and D pertain to the license plate of his car. Column E contains his driver license number, and F is the jurisdiction of the license. OR is Oregon. Column G is the onboarding date, and by that's the date that the Uber company certified Mr. Lane to drive, and that date was July 5th, 2017. And the city would have received, I did not personally receive the email, but it's automatically sent every day, so the city would have received that that day or the next day, and seeing that the list was certified by Uber and accepted its driver's list, subject to ongoing audits, field audits, routine samples we take to check driver's compliance, and other forms of review, if you will. The word yes in column H, I don't know for sure, but I believe that's a statement by Uber that the driver is at that point currently active. And I took the sample here. Sample date was December 26, 2017. I did check the Uber list more recently than that, and Mr. Lane was still on the list. And the onboarding date is a fact of some significance, as I will point out a little further when we look at the driving record of Mr. Lane. That's why that's important. So I'd like to turn to that, some of the driving record facts now. So after Mr. Lane's ride audit, I put him in the lineup to review his driving record, and if there's any prior warnings or other information from Uber about Mr. Lane. So I'd like to walk through the facts and findings that emerged to me in that process, especially because the Oregon DMV printouts can get confusing. So I'd like to refer now to the DMV printout, which I collected. This is hearings office exhibit number 13. And to some extent, this also touches on Mr. Lane's exhibit, which is stamped as hearings officer exhibit number 5, which is its own title is MUL Criminal Case Summary. It looks to me to be a court document, or a document generated by a court. It appears to me to be a circuit court document because the plaintiff in the case is State of Oregon. And I will cross-reference the case to the driving history in this current part of my discussions. So I do want to point out the significant entries into Mr. Lane's driving record. So on the exhibit, the DMV printout has four pages numbered in the top right-hand corner. On page one, there are two suspensions. If you see the bold face, the lines aren't numbered, looking back, maybe there might be a way to be more efficient about this. But if you look on the page one, there's some bold face print, a line that says DL colon valid operator's license. I'll use that as my reference point and count lines below that. And I'm now on the DMV printout that is on Mr. Lane's desk to the right of the microphone, further right, not that far right, there. So line, I'm counting down four from that boldface, says suspension. There's a space 020207. And then two lines below that, there's another word, suspension, followed by 060207. Those are two driver's license suspensions entered onto, the way I interpret this document, entered onto Mr. Lane's driver record. Following the first one across, the DR uninsured, that's a suspension for driving uninsured. The second one I mentioned, following that across, the F/comply, that's an entry meaning failure to comply. That indicates that the failure to comply is a failure to comply with the court's order to pay a fine. Pertinently, the DMV, the suspensions were entered. The first one was entered February 2nd, 2007. The second one was entered June 2nd, 2007. And those suspensions did not, his license didn't get reinstated until September 26, 2014. That's the re-in full text. That means reinstated fully. Those are important because under the city's criteria, the 06 criterion that I'm talking about here, a driver has to be free of driver's license suspensions for the 3 years before being certified. And doing the math, going back to the Excel spreadsheet's date, July 5th, counting 2000, let me get the year, 2017, 3 years before that means that Mr. Lane would have to have been clear suspensions from July 4th, 2014. But as indicated, for these two suspensions, he didn't get reinstated until September that year. So the result of this is that at the time Uber certified Mr. Lane to drive, he was actually not qualified by virtue of not having 3 years of a suspension or revocation-free license. So, turning to page two of the driver printout, there are five suspensions to mention on this page. And again, using the bold line as a benchmark, and this bold line says Lane, comma, Kevin Charles Patrick. These suspensions appear as, on line, count them down, two, suspension F comply, another failure to comply. Six, line six, another failure to comply. Line 8, line 13, and the final line 14. So just summarizing these, there were suspensions imposed by Oregon DMV during the years 2007 to 2011 for essentially driving uninsured and failing to pay court fines. The license was reinstated on those problems the same day as before, September 26th. So we're looking at more suspensions that should have prevented Mr. Lane from being certified by Uber. I'd now like to turn to page 3 of that DMV printout and counting up from the bottom this time, two lines, the word suspension followed by 092016, failure to comply. Off, that OFF means an offense date, and that offense date is 12/23/2015, a date of significance because it is the date and the offense that is referred to in the court printout that Mr. Lane was able to find. So I'll talk about that court printout, which is, let's see, I think Exhibit 5. Yes, Exhibit 5. So I'd like now to, and just finishing the entry here, that reinstatement for the failure to comply on the December 23rd offense, the re-in-full term means reinstated fully, and that date is a critical date, September 28, 2016. And that date has two meanings. The first meaning, again, that date was within the 3-year look back that Uber should have caught and held back on issuing, on certifying Mr. Lane. But that date also now is within a 3-year look back from today. So that date premises the date in the determination that Mr. Lane can drive again if he should wish to approach a company and be certified again. So just to finish the thread on that, the 9/28/2016 suspension, if we count forward 3 years from that date, the third year ends on September 27th, 2019. And that is the date that Mr. Lane would be eligible to drive again under subsection 6 in the penalty letter, the suspension letter. And that date is on page 1 in red print in the caption, so to speak.
And I'm sorry, all the dates that I see on the DMV printout are for 2014. September 26, 2014 is the date of reinstatement?
Yes, and those dates, two things on that. You did see those. Those are now more than 3 years, and those reinstatements happened more than 3 years ago, so by mathematics and logic, he couldn't have been suspended on those. Those suspensions don't have any effect anymore under subparagraph 6. The 2016 restatement is present on page 3 of the DMV printout. Second line up from the bottom, the line reads suspension 09/20/116. That's the date the suspension was imposed by DMV. The zeros mean it wasn't, there was no ending date because it was a failure to comply, that is a failure to pay a court fine for the offense dated 12/23/2015. And DMV fully reinstated Mr. Lane on September 28, 2016.
Okay, so the paperwork that I have for page 3 does not reflect that information. It's, let me see if I accidentally misplaced it in the other documents here. The page 3 that I have starts out, it's just a few lines talking about issuance of the driver's license sticker. And the last two entries are for convictions, failure to obey, and driving while suspended on September 27th, 2016.
That should be page 4 in the top left.
Okay.
Mine also says page 3.
Yes. So I believe our exhibit 13 only has 3 pages.
Take a look here. Ah, okay, because I have referred to the wrong line because it got printed out from, you have the correct pages. The page number is page 3 that I'm talking about. Let's see. Yeah, so on this page, it's the issuance. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 up from the bottom. Of an intent to suspend on September 28th, 2016, and that the individual is going to be suspended on October 28th, 2016, and that suspension got mailed on October 4th, 2016. To take effect on the 28th.
Okay, and so I think what you're stating that based upon the intent to suspend, are you stating that that's that conclusion you drew was based upon the INT after the September 28th? 2016?
Yes, because that's the date that the suspension becomes active on a month later on October 28th, 2016. And DMV did provide mail notice there. That date is the 4th.
Okay.
So that date should have prevented, again, Mr. Lane from being certified. It's, unlike the other suspensions, this date is within the 3-year look-back period from today. If we count forwards 3 years, that's the from September 27th, we're going by the issuance date. The suspension, it's basically a bar for 3 years. So the reinstatement date, just to correct the record here, should be the day before that October 28th. It should be October 27th, 2019. So I would like to correct the record with regard to that.
Noted.
So, turning now to Exhibit 5, this is the court printout that Mr. Lane was able to track down, apparently through Troutdale, or efforts at that time. So if we turn to Exhibit 5, a few important facts do emerge from that. So this does corroborate the DMV history. This is a December 23rd ticket. And the interesting thing about this ticket here is that it breaks down the process that sort of the steps along the way of this traffic ticket case. So if we look at Exhibit 5, suspension. Actually, here, this does have I thought this was the correct date. If we look here, at the very end, the 9/28/2016, that is the license reinstatement date. I thought that was correct. Yes. So this court did reinstate the license on the 28th. So yes, the 3 years is the day before, 9/27/2016. And walking the docket backwards, if we will, at the last page of exhibit number five, we see the delinquent entry on July 11th. That's when the court noted to itself that Mr. Lane had stopped paying on his ticket, which the payment schedule on page two of exhibit five got entered on June 13th. It appears to have been a plea to one charge and dismissal of another. And that's the judgment that we see listed on June 7th. The driving uninsured was dismissed, and a sentence of violation was issued on May 9th. So if we turn to Mr. Lane's exhibits number 2, 3, and 4, yes, his letter, the Troutdale letter about the citation and the about the error regarding the citation, I did look at that. I find that credible. And so as I mentioned earlier, we do credit that information and asked to take no action on the, as I think as Mr. Lane pointed out in his testimony, the third offense or third activity listed in the determination on page one at the bottom of page one, the conviction of driving while suspended or revoked. We agree that the court did walk that back. So that's the line in that table that the bottom line should have no effect. So I'd like to, those are some of the pertinent facts, and I'd like to turn to some analysis and conclusions and maybe some interpretations of the code based on or circulating around those facts. The standard for a suspension under subparagraph 6, I would say the city needs reasonable grounds to believe that at any time a driver no longer meets the city's permitting requirements. And that's under the A4 requirement, that at any time the city will suspend a permit if at any time the permittee fails to no longer meet or comply with any section of the code. So reading that requirement together with the subparagraph 6 requirement to have no suspensions on your record for 3 years, we look back to see at any time there are suspensions within the 3 years. And that's how we look at I've already mentioned it, the one we've been looking at. So it causes me to then turn to the text of subsection 6. And what does that require? Well, as I mentioned in the opening remarks, I would submit that there are three individual phrases in subsection 6. The pertinent ones, person's driving privileges being suspended or revoked by a governing jurisdiction as a result of a driving-related incident. I'd like to start with those in reverse order. Was the driver suspended, quote, as a result of a driving-related incident? Submit to the hearings office that the answer to that is yes. I'd like to discuss and interpret that language a little bit. The gist, I think, of the requirement is that a suspension to be applicable, or to be a demerit, if you will, has to suspend from a driving activity. So I believe a viable interpretation of what is as a result of a driving-related incident would be a suspension is impermissible upon existence of a nexus or a rational connection between the suspension and an act of driving. I think the text supports this. The in subparagraph 6, the terms, the words driving and related are connected by a hyphen, making them a double adjective. And that adjective modifies the word incident. Someone, a critic, might argue, well, hey, that's a driving incident, and that text, that means that you can only count suspensions that happen when I'm driving. And this suspension came because there was driving and a failure to pay a court fine. And I don't think that looking at that phrase as a driving incident and limiting it makes sense. The text doesn't support that because you would ignore the double adjective of driving related. And we can't skip words. And I think that would be overly technical if we ignore the word driving related. And I'd like to give the hearings off an example. Suppose someone has been driving after drinking. A police officer pulls them over, arrests them for DUI, administers a breath test. The person blows into the machine and fails. Oregon law, under Oregon law, DMV suspends you for failing the breath test. Now, if we ignore that word driving related, a critic might say, well, there's a suspension for failing the breath test. You didn't do any driving when you blew into the machine. You can't count that breath test suspension against me for my driving privilege. I'd say, no way. That's number one, you overlook what is driving related. And second, that driving, that suspension was driving related because there was an impaired driving incident directly connected to that breath test. So I think that if we look at that driving related phrase too narrowly, we miss suspensions that are clearly within the city of Portland's interest in considering in a driver application for driving people around for hire. I think it would be very damaging if that phrase got interpreted too narrowly because something like an etoxilizer fail suspension would not be counted, looked at in a permit application. And I think that's not a narrowness that the code supports. So I think driving related is more than driving, but it's not, on the same hand, every suspension. And I'd like to turn now and talk a little bit about some context that helps us understand why driving related doesn't open the floodgates to every possible license suspension. I think the vehicle code is applicable context. That's ORS chapters 801 through
Namer, it's not necessary to cite all the
it's
the numbers associated.
Quite a collection of chapters of legislative enactments. And within, I think the vehicle code is applicable context because several sections within the driver requirements section of the city code, which is 16.40.270, that's the TNC driver requirements. It refers to the vehicle code to get a sense of what's acceptable driving, a driving record looking back. So the city code refers to the number of driving, like vehicle code violations, either in Oregon or another state, that a driver can have. And this particular section is worded to look at any, basically any state's suspension of a driver for a driving-related reason. And the text is deliberately broad to point the reviewing body to other states, and I'll say a few words about that in a minute here. So I think that the vehicle code does provide some context. There's a statute 801.010 at subsection 11B that in a nutshell authorizes the state of Oregon to take action against driver's license for unsafe behavior or disrespecting or disobeying court orders. So I think that the city code section of what is a driving-related incident is informed by that context. And another interesting question emerges, and that is, well, what kind of activities are driving-related and not driving-related? Well, I think the court hearing that you don't appear for is within that statute I just cited, is the type of official disrespect relating to driving that the city is interested in. So, and you get suspended for failing to appear at your court hearing, just like you get a driver's license suspended for failing to pay a fine that the court orders, as well as license suspensions for having too many traffic tickets. So those are driving activities that can premise some suspensions that the city of Portland is interested in. So we might ask, well, what kind of suspensions wouldn't the city be interested in? Well, as an example, the state of Oregon orders DMV to suspend a license if a driver is a minor in possession of alcohol that he or she obtained by lying about his or her age. If you're convicted of that MIP and lying about your age, the court has to suspend your driver's license. And there could be no driving involved in that. It could just be underage people at the 7-Eleven trying to buy alcohol. So no driving related, but that's a suspension, but that doesn't, I would argue, come within the city of Portland's requirement. It's not driving related incident. The state of Oregon, and that's ORS 471.430. And that also happens to be even outside of the vehicle code, but that's still a suspension. Back in the vehicle code, DMV will suspend you for lying on a driver's license application. And that's at ORS 807.430. And there's no driving involved in that. It could be someone who goes into DMV with a false name or, say, a false date of birth. And if detected, that person could be investigated and convicted of lying to DMV for a driver's license. But there's no driving involved, so I would submit that if that suspension came on a driving record, I would say the city should not consider that. The state of Oregon has to suspend your driver's license if you're convicted of possession of a controlled substance, manufacturing controlled substance being illegal drugs, manufacturing drugs. That's at 809, ORS 809.265. And again, no driving there. So I think the Portland City of Portland Transportation Bureau would want to be thorough and judicious for a suspension like that and understand, well, there's no driving related to that suspension. So I think that context helps understand the interpretation that I'm suggesting, that we're looking for a nexus between the suspension and a driving-related activity under the permitting criteria. So the other terms in subsection 6 exist. I would submit they're not troubling, but I will cover them briefly. So the suspension has to be issued by a governing jurisdiction. That term is not defined in the code, but I would assert that it should mean basically a governing agency or a government body that has jurisdiction over a statewide driving privilege. And see, the city code can't say just an Oregon suspension, because we get drivers from many different states. In my experience in looking at driver's records and in talking to drivers, I meet drivers every time I go out who have just moved to Oregon from other states. So the city code can't limit suspensions to just Oregon suspensions. That's why we have to use in the code language that's broader. So we say governing jurisdiction. And in Oregon, the Oregon Department of Transportation, through its DMV, the Driver Motor Vehicle Service Division, do have the administrative responsibility to administer driver's license for all drivers. In fact, the printout I've introduced into evidence is a printout of information compiled by the Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles. I know that because I ordered that information myself from the DMV, and I did that under privileges that the City of Portland and the DMV have granted to me to order that information. I collected that information in the course of my duties as a transportation officer who conducts ride audits and investigates drivers. And it's the city's routine practice to look into drivers' records and to collect that information after field audits. The date of the record, December 27th, was close in time to when I analyzed that record. I believe I analyzed that record the same day. And it was me, the city employee, who filed that record and brought it to the hearings and provided it to the other parties. And finally, the language in the subsection 6, are we talking about a driver privilege? Yes, we are. Again, the printout comes from Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles. In fact, page 1, or the top line of the printout, has Mr. Lane's driver's license number, 982-5247. I suppose I should redact that from the tape somehow. But you'll see his driver's license number there. And that's the same number that was on the driver's license that I looked at when I asked Mr. Lane to identify himself to me, and I wrote that number on my warning slip. So in conclusion, I would assert to the hearings officer that the evidence and the analysis demonstrates that the suspension is lawful. The certified mailing dates are consistent with the letters in the record. The suspension period, as I mentioned earlier, is measured by a 3-year look back, which we have under Mr. Lane's exhibit number 5, looking back to the date in the letter, which is September 27, 2019. I would ask on behalf of the City of Portland that you affirm the city's decision.
Thank you. Mr. Lane, do you have any questions for Mr. Nymura?
I'm just curious how Uber was able to certify me to legally drive for the City of Portland without doing their research. Shouldn't I have been told in the very beginning when I applied for this that because this driving while suspended was on my record that I would not be able to drive for them?
I heard your question, Bish. Ought not Uber to have pointed that out to you? And I would, I think yes, that would have been fair and accurate for them to help you with that and to help you understand that.
Well, I'm curious, help me understand. They shouldn't have granted me to drive at all if it was illegal for me to drive.
Correct.
And now I've now financed a vehicle. This is my main way of making money and feeding my family, and it's being torn away because of somebody else's. I guess I can't say mistake, but maybe overlooking. So now I'm in a really horrible situation because the company that I'm supposed to trust has failed me, I guess, or didn't do what they should have done. And I don't know. And for my license was suspended because failure to pay I was.
Wait, so Mr. Lane, is this another question, or is Mr. Nymer done with his
testimony? Oh, sorry, sorry.
I would like to hear what you have to say, but if you could just hold off until we get back to you.
That's fine. That's fine.
Do you have any other questions for Mr. Nymer?
Not at the second.
Okay. I do have a couple of questions, Mr. Nymer. You talked about the specific elements in City Code 164270E. The subject of what we're talking about is the basis of the determination. I would like you to talk to me a little bit about whether or not, we talked a lot about the 3-year period preceding the filing. The specific words and phrase in that provision talk about during the 3-year period preceding the filing of the initial application. What was the date of the initial application?
Based on my experience in talking with Uber drivers and being present at the Uber office and seeing how drivers come in and out, I can't give you the date of an exact date, but I would say it would be very close in time to July 5th, probably no more than a few days before that Mr. Lane walked into the office or started the application. It would have been very soon before that date.
And what are you basing that on?
I base that on two things. First of all, in talking with drivers, I get the impression that they are it's a very quick process to sign up, get your car inspected, and have Uber certify you by looking at your background, maybe a week or so. The second thing is also in my experience to being at the Uber office, I've seen drivers come in with their into the office and finish their onboarding process, if you will, and it appears to me to move very quickly. They get people in and out. So based on my conversations and my site visit to Uber, it appears that it's a quick moving process, probably a week, give or take a few days, before that July 5th date.
Okay. And I think you've relied on the July 5th date based upon the Excel spreadsheet information that was provided by Uber?
Correct.
Okay. So as far as how I should interpret initial application, can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I know that the code is inconsistent with respect to how it references application versus initial application. And here we're talking about 3 years prior to the initial application. So
yes, so I think that means two things. First of all, on its own, it means the time when Uber first certified a driver.
So would it be an application, Mr. Lane's application to Uber for certification?
Correct. The first look, if you will. Now that doesn't exist in isolation, and the reason for that is reading subsection 6 together with, and this is cited in the determination letter, on page 2, a suspension for under subsection 940A4. Suspension for at any time failing or no longer meeting any section of the chapter. And so reading that number 4 together with number 6, I mentioned this earlier, is I would submit reading them together means there is an ongoing need to be in compliance with the 3-year look back, if you will.
So I hear what you're saying. One thing I want to draw your attention to is even in reference to 270 subsection 6 and 7 above, 6 talks about the 3 years preceding the filing of the initial application, and then 7 talks about whether or not the applicant has 2 or more traffic violations, and then it talks about within the previous 12 months from the date of the application without reference to the initial application. So is there a way that I can distinguish between the terminology here?
Uh,
Or can you tell me, is this Mr. Lane's initial application first ever?
I can tell you that. This is Mr. Lane's first application, because if it wasn't, first of all, Uber didn't exist in Portland for more than, since about 2015. And that column of information in that spreadsheet I showed you is the initial the initial certification date. And every driver that Uber certifies that is still valid to drive is listed on that spreadsheet. I blanked out on this particular page every other name that appears. But in my experience at looking at this printout dozens of times, that date there is the date of initial onboarding, which Uber rendered a week or so before Mr. Lane first approached the company.
Thank you.
As to distinguish those two uses of the word application, one with initial and one without initial, I would say while it's true there could be a question on how do we distinguish or what's it pointing to, the short answer is it's pointing to the initial application, which has to be renewed every year because the permit only runs for 1 year. And any difference in applying that, I would assert, is mooted by the operation of that suspension section number 4, which, reading them together, requires compliance at all times you're operating as, you know, as a permitted driver holding a valid permit. So to give those two sections life together, I would assert means that the requirements in subsection E, that long list of requirements, are rolling requirements. They're always present.
Okay. And when I'm looking at the determination here, it talks about the city's intent to suspend Mr. Lane's permit or certification beginning on January 18th. And then it also talks about while your certification is suspended. So is this determination proposed suspension of both his Mr. Lane certification and permit, or just one or the other?
The certification is a name of a privilege that is, it's by all intents and purposes a permit. It's issued by Uber. On behalf of the city, and then the city confirms the process. So the essence of certification and permit is that they are both types of privileges. So they are synonyms. In the essence, they refer to a city privilege.
But the same city privilege to drive as a TNC driver?
Correct.
They both reference the city privilege?
Correct. They both state the privilege under the city's ordinance to drive people for money as a TNC driver, Uber or Lyft.
Then my follow-up question would be, why use different terminology then, if they're essentially functionally the same?
Different terminology, I would assert, stems from the initial issuing party, if you will. And here's where I'm going with that. To my view, government agencies issue permits, and the government does not stand down from its authority, and if it writes a code, its requirements to receive applications, and if criteria met, issue permits. Under this particular ordinance, much of the legwork for some drivers is available for the company to perform if they want, and that's a certification, and that is essentially issuing a privilege or determining that a person is qualifying for a privilege. But because a private company is not a governmental agency, and because they're performing this sort of limited function under the city's oversight, the director has the authority and job to finalize the certifications. a different word is chosen because the company is not a governmental agency, and the privilege it's issuing is still subject to the city's final permitting authority.
Okay. One last thing. I want to draw your attention back to the DMV printout, Exhibit 13, page three. And earlier I had asked you about the meaning of INT in that line, which references the word issuance.
Yes.
What does VWPP mean?
I do not know.
Okay. I just find it a little strange, and maybe if you could illuminate as to maybe, you know, your additional knowledge from reading these printouts, but it just is a little bit strange to me that they talk about suspension on these other pages by clearly writing the word suspension, and then with respect to the intent to suspend, there's just the word issuance. So are all the references to issuance on the previous pages on 1 and 2 also referring to intent to suspend?
Let me see if I can help you with that.
And primarily, the reason why I find this perplexing is when I look at all of this and I see the word issuance and duplicate and then conviction, my original thought was issuance pertains to issuance of some sort of like a copy of an ID or sticker or something like that. But again, I'm not an expert in reading these, and you may have a little bit more experience or information to be able to help me decipher these terms and how they're displayed.
Sure, and the duplicates there, those refer to like a card that the DMV would issue, and like that duplicate with a sticker is a sticker that is issued to put on an ID card of some kind. So those terms refer to the actual tangible piece of identification. The issuance, I do not know why that particular suspension is broken down by the issuance and then with the mailing date. And I don't know why it's phrased differently. So I have insufficient information to answer your question about that. I know that the suspension is corroborated by the circuit court printout as Exhibit 5.
Okay, thank you. Those are all the questions that I have. Is there anything briefly that you'd like to supplement your testimony with?
You're asking Mr. Lane, correct?
Or me? You, Mr. Namer.
No.
Or we can, okay. Yeah. And Mr. Lane, at this time, would you like to submit additional testimony to supplement your original statements?
No.
Mr. Namara?
No, we submit to the hearings office.
Okay. Any final argument?
City waves argument.
Okay. Mr. Lane?
No.
Okay. Well, that is going to be the conclusion of the evidentiary phase of this proceeding. I am not going to make a decision today. I want to take some additional time to review everything and then make a decision, and I will be letting the parties know by mailing a copy of that decision. It does appear that there is a stay on the city's determination, and so the stay will be in place until I issue my decision. Does that make sense to you, Mr. Lane?
So that means that I cannot drive until you make a decision?
The stay actually makes it so that the city's decision is not in effect until
okay.
I either lift the stay or I make a decision that's in their favor.
Okay. I got it.
Okay. Please ask Mr. Namer if maybe you would like a little bit more clarification about the stay. I'm sure he'd be willing to explain that to you.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much for both of your thoughtful presentations today. I'll get that decision out to you as soon as possible. It could be a few weeks, however.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.
Hearing's now closed.